Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. While some of us were enjoying time off for July 4th, this month comes with a fresh financial picture for California, to the tune of a state budget totaling $310 billion. But a feat that involves state lawmakers and Governor Gavin Newsom came with negotiations up to the finish line, given that California is facing a $32 billion shortfall. In addition to hashing out the state's financial priorities, there's also a new chapter within the state capitol. A key transition of power took place within the California Assembly, a new speaker for the first time since 2016. That, coupled with ongoing demolition and renovations, if you've had a chance to walk past the state capitol recently, those are just a few of the headlines you may have missed within the past week or so. Nicole Nixon is CAP Radio's political reporter and joins us with more. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning.
Okay, so what is the big picture for this fiscal year's state budget, and what were the main sticking points for the governor?
Yeah, the state's Democratic leaders say that they are really proud of this year's budget. Despite that revenue shortfall, they say they were able to protect investments in what they describe as core programs, so education, the social safety net. They continue to fund priorities like setting up universal pre-kindergarten for every child in the state, extending health care to all low-income undocumented folks. And they did those things without dipping into the state's rainy day fund. The sticking points, the big one, I think, was the proposal from the governor to streamline permitting to build new infrastructure projects. We'll talk about that a bit more, I think, later. But he really pitched this as a way to build more projects faster, draw down a lot more federal money. These are climate-related projects. And then, you know, transit funding was a sticking point as well.
So how were lawmakers able to essentially like protect key programs, add additional programs, but they were also tasked with finding a way to address a $32 billion budget deficit, which is really like a 180 from the last fiscal year. How did they manage to do this without dipping into the state's rainy day reserves?
Yeah, they did a few things. So there were some cuts, I think about $8 billion overall in cuts. They did delay quite a bit of spending to future years, so they still plan to spend on things, but they're just delaying it. And they're also shifting how some projects are paid for. So the governor and lawmakers are now working on putting about $6 billion worth of projects in front of voters next year in the form of bonds. So that means voters will probably get to decide on a $1 billion climate bond and about $4.7 billion to build behavioral health treatment centers.
You joined us in the past with the Department of Finance, given that this year is kind of unique, given the tax filing extension for many counties in California. These Californians received it, residents received it because of the storm-related disaster declarations that happened at the beginning of the year. How did this impact or even complicate the budget process and negotiations for lawmakers? Because they don't really have a complete picture, a financial picture of how much money they have to work with.
Yeah, I mean, it left a huge question mark over the entire budget process, over these negotiations. I think the state is hoping for, I think the number was about $45 billion that it does not have in its like treasury right now that it would if the tax deadline had not been delayed. So the state is hoping that that number is what actually comes in before October, which is the new tax filing deadline. There are some trigger cuts as well in case that number is not quite up to what they were expecting, with some, I think that was a housing like seismic retrofitting thing. So I guess they'll wait and see in October what those financials pencil out.
Yeah, so it wasn't like a short delay. I mean, it went from like April to October to the fall. When it comes to Republicans in both the state Senate and Assembly, they were critical of the budget, how it was negotiated. What stood out to you about their arguments?
Well, as Republicans' numbers in the legislature have shrunk, so has their influence. Democrats obviously have a supermajority. They don't need Republicans to pass most legislation or to pass the budget. Every year, Republicans object to being left out of these budget negotiations. They also object to not being just kept in the loop about the day-to-day of these negotiations or what's in the budget until there is a hearing in the budget committees and they have a chance to ask legislative and administration officials about, you know, the details.
Do they have any weight to potentially, you know, in their view, fix what they believe is a broken process?
Well, they don't. They just are so small in numbers, you know, these days. But they've talked about, you know, conference committees. This is a thing that used to be a thing when small groups of lawmakers from both parties would get together and sort of hammer out some sticking points. But these budget negotiations really happen at a very high level between Democratic leaders. And it is easy for Dems to ignore Republicans and just do what they want when it comes to the budget.
So given that state lawmakers, they were able to get the state budget, you know, through the finish line or across the finish line by, you know, the deadline, which I believe was mid-June, the governor has signed it. Is everything now a done deal, or are there still outstanding budget items that are still being worked through?
The governor has signed the main budget bill that keeps the government funded. Other, like, we call these trailer bills. They're, like, budget adjacent, but they, you know, aren't in part of that huge, like, line item bill. Those are on his desk. I believe he plans to sign this infrastructure package today.
Okay. When it comes to that infrastructure package, we've talked about it on Insight. It's a plan that the governor introduced back in May to expedite the permitting process for large infrastructure projects in California. Remind us how this package will impact and affect Californians.
Well, you might see more construction. It's meant to speed up building projects, you know, rail and highway, renewable energy projects, some water. And it does that by streamlining environmental permitting. This is already done to some extent for certain big projects like sports arenas. It also limits environmental lawsuits over these projects to 9 months when feasible. Now, that's not like a hard and fast 9 months. Sometimes that can go up to like 11 months a year, is what administration officials say. And they say that this will make a big difference. The Newsom administration's big argument here is that this infrastructure package will help California meet its ambitious climate goals that are coming in 2030, 2045. In fact, a spokesman for Newsom told reporters that this whole like argument over the infrastructure permit reform signals sort of a mindset shift in the environmental movement, that in the past, environmentalists have just said no to building things. But with the intensity of climate change and the impacts, the governor is saying yes to building things like solar farms and renewable energy to get off of fossil fuels.
And this wasn't necessarily a streamlined process within the governor's own political party. I mean, some of the party members had some pause. What was the concern that they had with this infrastructure package?
Yeah, there were a few. I mean, first with the content, mainly there were concerns that the Delta Conveyance Project or the Delta Tunnel would be included. This is obviously a hugely complicated and controversial proposal to build a tunnel to send water from the Sacramento Delta to Southern California. That was taken out. It's not in the final version. Lawmakers were also just reluctant to rush this. They like to take their time with bills. They like to give things consideration and debate. Several lawmakers said something this big and consequential just should not be rushed. Mm-hmm. It should go through the normal process. And then also some lawmakers kind of felt burned by the governor before on this sort of thing. Last year, he did something similar. He brought a package of climate bills that included keeping the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant open for a few more years and some other things like limiting new oil wells, how close they can be to homes and schools. He brought this to lawmakers late in the session. It was a heavy lift for those bills. Most of them did make it through, but later Newsom was quoted saying that he had to jam his legislature on climate bills. So some lawmakers took offense to that when they worked really hard to get those bills through last year.
Given that you think, or I mean, it's projected that he's going to sign it today, correct? The infrastructure package. You know, you mentioned the Delta tunnels. You know, were there other big notable changes that were made to this legislation in order to get it across the finish line?
Well, it went from 11 bills in the beginning is what he had wanted to 5. So it got, cut down quite a bit. It also does not include things like ocean desalination projects.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Cap Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon about California's new state budget and other headlines this month. So during all of these budget negotiations, there was a key transition of power within the California State Assembly. Speaker Anthony Rendon, who is the second longest speaker in California history, he agreed to step down, pass the gavel to Assemblymember Robert Rivas after a bit of a power struggle. This was a transition that former Speaker Rendon admitted to the Associated Press that left him with hurt feelings. What exactly happened?
This all actually started more than a year ago, so it's a bit of a slow roll power struggle. It was right before Memorial Day weekend last year that Rivas went to Speaker at the time, Anthony Rendon, and said that he had the votes to become Speaker. Rendon worked over that long weekend to peel off some of those votes, and there was kind of this, they were in limbo for a bit. There was a Democratic caucus meeting that went the whole day. At the end of that, Anthony Rendon was still the Speaker. Then there were elections last year. I think both of those members were working pretty hard to elect Democrats, but elect Democrats that they thought might be friendly to them or, you know, give some campaign money and help to get some help to be speaker. After members were sworn in late last year after those elections, the caucus again met and it was decided then that Robert Rivas would be speaker, but not until now. So Anthony Rendon got the first half of this year. I think the deadline, you know, meant that he got to be involved in the budget one last time, see some things through and just have some time to actually do that transition. So officially on June 30th, Robert Rivas was sworn in as speaker.
And you did an exit interview with Rendon before he stepped down as speaker. I mean, it was a bumpy, you know, last year for him. What stood out to you about the conversation?
Yeah, you know, in the past, I think I've tried to get a little more details about what actually happened behind the scenes, but the Democrats in the legislature in the assembly have been pretty tight-lipped about, you know, what was actually spoken about in those hearings. It was in those caucus meetings, it was members only. You know, we talked a lot about Rendon's legacy, what he was most proud of accomplishing. 7.5 years is a long time to be speaker. And he's, you know, he said he was proud of passing consequential legislation like overtime for farm workers. He really got into the legislature over child care. So he, you know, over cuts to child care. So not only getting that money restored, but seeing record investments in that area, I think, was a big deal for him. But, you know, what stood out to me was that he was actually pretty chill. He seemed like a senior on the last week of school.
Yeah, maybe like had some closure, made peace with it, you know, next chapter for him. You know, you also attended the swearing-in ceremony of the new assembly speaker, Robert Rivas. They're both Democrats, but what stands out to you just initially about Rivas and how he will potentially lead his party within the assembly and how it could differ from Rendon?
Well, Robert Rivas is really promoting unity. I think it was a very tough, even though Democrats aren't, you know, talking publicly about everything that went on behind the scenes here, it was pretty bruising. So he's promoting unity. He talks about his background. He was born the child and the grandchild of farm workers. He grew up in farm worker housing. So Democrats in the assembly are happy to have somebody that represents, you know, a background in California that you don't often see at the highest levels of government. And Rivas has already made some personnel changes. He's appointed a new majority leader, a new speaker pro tem, which kind of leads the day-to-day in the assembly. He said he wants to minimize disruption, so not promoting new committee chairs in the middle of a legislative session. So, you know, as far as his leadership style, we'll have to see.
Another big headline, you've been following this one since really the beginning at the state capitol, is an update on the Capitol building itself. I mean, more than a year after lawmakers and their staff, they moved out, crews began demolishing the Capitol Annex building last week. What's next for this project?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different parts to this Capitol Annex project. One is the annex itself, which is the office building connected to the Capitol, though it was physically disconnected a few weeks ago and it has now started to be torn down. A group of opponents have sued over the design of that new annex, also the fact that the state wants to build a museum visitor center underneath.
And that's typically where people would have demonstrations and rallies, correct?
Right. So the state just recirculated, you know, the plans for public comment. That closed just a few weeks ago, and there has not been an update yet. I think we're just waiting to see whether any of those plans change based on the public feedback.
Nicole, thanks for getting us up to speed.
Thank you.
That is CAP Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon. Up next, some California officials are looking towards Texas for solutions towards homelessness. We'll learn more about the Lone Star State's success and if it could work here at home. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.